Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for October the 30th, 2020. This is episode number 30. Today, we'll be talking about driving Tesla full self-driving beta, Mini is getting some new all-electric models, and the Polestar 2 is getting recalled again. I'm Dominic Chioni, Inside EVs editor and Inside EVs forum moderator. Joining us today, we have Tom Malogny, longtime EV owner and Inside EVs editor. We also have Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all your usual podcast platforms. And of course, we have Kyle Connor from the Outer Spec Motoring and One Lap YouTube channels. He also puts together the awesome videos for the Inside EVs YouTube channel. Go subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. So welcome, gentlemen of the panel and ladies and gentlemen of the audience. All right. So sometimes we talk about the cars that we have. We happen to have charging in our driveways. But this week, we have to discuss a car that is no longer charging in our driveways. So I understand Tom here has made a video about his Tesla Model 3 after 16 months of ownership and 16,000 miles. Let's see. Do you want to tell us what's going on here? Maybe a quick summation of your review and thoughts about the car. And what your plans for are.
Okay, great. Yeah, so it's I've had my Model 3 for about 16 months. It's a dual motor long range and drove it about 21,000 miles, a little bit less. And some of the listeners here might remember in last week's podcast, we were talking a little bit about the new Model 3 that has the heat pump and some upgrades, new center console, longer range. And I kind of made a joke about, yeah, I might have to get one of those. Well, I did. I just thought about it for a couple of hours and said, oh, what the hell, I'm going to get one, and put in my order and listed my car online. And like the next day, I had someone at my house with $41,000 in cash. Said, here, I want this car right now. And I didn't even have the title because I financed it. So they're like, I don't care. Send us a title when you get it. This is the car I want. I've been looking for this spec and so forth and so on. And so here, take it. And we signed the contract and everything. So it happened really quickly. It kind of like caught me off guard. I was just kind of thinking about doing it. And then 48 hours later, my car was gone. And, you know, it just happened really quickly. But sometimes that's the best way of doing it. So you don't have regrets or second thoughts. So now I'm waiting. It's 6 to 10 weeks for the new Model 3 to come in. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it. It's, I think part of the reason why I wanted to do it, and maybe it's just an excuse for convincing my wife that I want to do it, is that I think it's important that we have the new version, because John Neff, our managing editor, has one of the Model 3 like mine with full, but he has the full self-driving option. He's not one of the beta testers, but it's good for the Inside EV staff to have the latest and greatest, so we can do our 70 mile an hour road tests, supercharging tests, all kind of stuff with it. So it does make sense. And here in New Jersey, we have a new $5,000 cash on the hood rebate for EVs that cost less than $55,000. So it's literally going to be like $3,000 out of pocket for me. And I'm getting a brand new car with no miles on it. That's better with the heat pump and everything. There's one feature on it that isn't going to have that my previous car had. We're going to talk about that a little later. I'm not happy about it. But that's right. Another topic for us to discuss a little later in the show.
Right. Tell us a little bit about what you think of the car that you've had for the last 16 months. So, you know, were you're happy with the ownership experience, but.
Yeah, really. I mean, I bought another one. You know, the car's not perfect. Nothing is. The over-the-air updates are fantastic. I took a little bit in the video. I posted a video on my YouTube channel. That's a State of Charge with Tom Malogny, and also then embedded it in the post on Inside EVs. I took a little bit about some of the things. Like one of the things that used to bother the heck out of me was, in order to have the car lock when you walk away, you would check a box. You know, lock. When you walk away from the car, and which you need, because in public, when you leave the vehicle, you don't have a key. You want it to lock when you get 10 or 12 feet away from the vehicle. But then it would also do that at home. And, you know, I have a private garage where I pull in, and when I would go inside the house, the car would lock, and then I'd forget, oh, there's something in the trunk or in the car that I have to get. And I'd walk out and it would be locked and I couldn't get in it because I left my cell phone inside charging or whatever. Or if I just forgot to charge the car and I went out in the garage to charge it, I couldn't because it was locked. It drove me bonkers. It was one of the most annoying features on the car. But then like 4 or 5 months into ownership, we got an over-the-air update and boom, Tesla enabled a little checkbox to don't lock when it's at home. So, you know, the over-the-air updates are fantastic. The car just keeps getting better, and you just don't see that on other cars. And, you know, we're critical of Tesla here. Tesla does a lot of things that drive us kind of crazy, but they still are ahead of everybody else. I mean, I almost wish that weren't the case, but it is. They still have the best technology. They're still making the best electric cars. And that's why I decided to get another one. I mean, there's other things. The efficiency is fantastic. I average 266 watt hours per mile over 21,000 miles. And I mean, that's better than what I averaged with my i3 before this. And the i3, BMW did everything they could to make that the most efficient car on the road. Now, granted, that was came out in 2014. Tesla had, you know, 4 or 5 years to improve things. So it's not really a perfectly fair comparison, but BMW is still selling that car and it's not more efficient than it was when they first launched it. So, you know, BMW put all their power and might behind building the most efficient electric car they could. And, you know, they sacrificed range by giving it a smaller battery. They sacrificed power. You know, it's not that powerful. They had Bridgestone develop these like crazy skinny tires that only the i3 uses to like shave millimeters off the width of the tires so there was less wind resistance. I talked to BMW engineers about how they fought to save like 10 grams of weight on a component in the car. They fought the designers. And then Tesla comes out with the Model 3, which is like, you know, a powerful, high-performance sports sedan that goes, you know, over 300 miles, and it just blows away the i3 in efficiency. So, you know, Tesla really has to be commended with that. I mean, there were some other things that bothered me a little bit, and I know I'm going to get beaten up about this because I keep bringing it up. But the Tesla mates of the sun visor clips are really cheap and plastic, and they break frequently. As you can tell, if you really look at that picture we have up there, you can see the part that cracked. It's very thin plastic. And if you just pull down, and if you don't pull out, if you pull down by mistake, it just snaps off. So the Model 3, the new refreshed one, now uses the magnetic sun visor clips that the model was introduced for the Model Y. So, you know, that's what pushed me over the edge. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to have to deal with these braking anymore. And I'm getting the magnetic clip, so I need to get a new car.
So you're talking about the Model 3's efficiency, but this new one that you're getting, I understand we have EPA numbers up for it now. It's even more efficient. So, yeah, what do you expect to see?
Exactly. Well, it's EPA rated at 353 miles. Mine, when it came out, was 310 miles, but then Tesla improved it to like 322 through software enhancements. But this new one now is 353 miles, which is crazy. And they're doing that, as far as we know, without making the battery larger. Right. I did see some speculation online that they're somehow we're squeezing more cells in there. I don't think that's the case. But it's still it's amazing. It can go 14% further than mine could. And mine was only 16 months old. So Tesla increased the Model 3's range 14% in the last year and a half. And you just don't see that with no. Other EVs. You know, they a few of them have increased the range, like the I-Pace now is coming out with better range. But Tesla is just efficiency. They're just hammering in on improvements. And it's why I decided to buy another one.
So one last question for me about this. So why get another Model 3 and not a Model Y?
Everyone's asking me that.
Right.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of reasons. Number one, I don't need the extra space. The Model Y is great and it has a lot more utility and it's probably a better electric vehicle for families. I don't have any kids. It's just my wife and I. So we don't have to fill up the back of the vehicle with, you know, all kind of stuff and go around. It's just the two of us. So I don't need the utility. Number two, I'm not crazy about how it looks. It kind of looks like a bloated Model 3. I'm not in love with it. I don't hate it, but I really like how the Model 3 looks. You know, so you know, it's I don't need it. I don't love it, and I don't think Tesla has really nailed down the production, the manufacturing of that vehicle yet. They're still, you know, we still see reports of people getting them where like the hatch doesn't close. And the one that I got, the early model that I got, if you remember, we talked about this a few months ago. I got one of the first Model Ys to do range tests with. There's wires, the wiring harness hanging out from the front right wheel well. The speaker fell off on the passenger side door. The rear hatch didn't close. When it came down, it kind of hit both sides and bounced before it latched. So, you know, Tesla releases cars, quite honestly, before they're ready to be released. And it takes them a year to get the manufacturing process nailed down. We're still in that first year. And I know people are probably going to be commenting, says, oh, I got a Y and it's perfect. You're great. You know, I'm happy for you. And I'm sure there's plenty of them that come that are perfect. But there's still a higher percentage of them that aren't. It's one of the reasons why I waited a year to get my first Model 3. I let them nail down that manufacturing. And I think they're at a point now with the Model 3 where it's solid and they're making them. They're a high percentage of them are coming out really well. So that's why those are the reasons why I decided to stick with the 3.
Right on. All right. Hey, so I also understand that both Kyle and Tom spent some time at Lucid Motors showroom this week, possibly in New York City. Do you want to tell us a bit about that experience? I believe you've seen the Lucid Air up close before, both of you. This time, though, you could sit inside of it and maybe have a more refined impression of the actual like production version of the car. So, Kyle, do you want to tell us about the things that really stuck out to you about it this time around?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. About, I don't know, 6 months, a year ago, something like this, I sat in one of their early production, it wasn't even production, pre-production cars at their headquarters in Newark, California. I believe Tom also sat in that same exact car. It had the executive rear seats, but it just didn't, like things were not as they should be. It was very early. This was as they should be. Basically, Lucid invited us over to Classic Car Club of Manhattan, which is a very famous car sharing, but also car enthusiast hangout spot in New York. Really cool place. Again, I grew up just outside New York City, so I'm pretty familiar with that. And we basically went inside this room. They had cleared out this entire space to make room for two Lucids. They had a Grand Touring Edition, which you're looking at now if you're on YouTube, and the Dream Edition, which was just behind this car. They had their powertrain electronics, motors, gearboxes, rolling chassis, everything there for us to see around this car or around the showroom. And we basically just had, you know, as much time as you want to go check them out, push buttons, see how it feels materials wise. They weren't totally finished. The seats were not final design. So sitting in the car didn't feel as cushy as I think it will. But overall, it gave you a great impression on just seeing the cars. They showed off one in Zenith Red. The screens were really cool. And it was just a nice experience to spend some time with Lucids. I made a whole bunch of videos for a whole bunch of channels. One of them will be on Inside EV soon. I know Tom shot some interviews with the executive team that will be on his channel. So we'll have a lot of cool content rolling out over the next, from my side, probably 3 months from that one experience.
Right on. Hey, Tom, so what was your impression of it this time around?
Yeah, so as Kyle mentioned, we didn't really learn anything new. This wasn't an event to give us new information, but it was a good opportunity for us to sit down and talk with the engineering design executives, get some interviews in, and we'll be putting some videos together of that shortly. You know, the big thing to me was that, as you see up on the screen here, we got to see the new Zenith Red color, which I think is the most striking of all the colors that the Air is going to be available in. And, you know, while we were there, their PR was kind of like, yeah, I think this might be the first time, you know, anybody's posting pictures of this. So I'm not sure. They weren't 100% certain of that, but I don't remember seeing this color out anywhere. And we went with that this was the first time it was shown, and nobody has seen to say that that's incorrect at this moment. But who knows, a picture might pop up at some point. But I thought it was absolutely stunning. And got to talk to, you know, like I said, Derek Jenkins and also Eric Bach of Lucid. We learned nothing really new, but we did get some good amount of information that we're going to put together and create some videos on Lucid. In person, the production version definitely is ready to go as it is. Kyle mentioned, we did sit in the vehicles previously, and you could tell they were just kind of like pre-production concepts. Lucid has it put together now. It looks like this is ready to go into production. We're hoping to get some time in Lucid factory tour, which could happen sometime in early 2021. Or I was kind of pushing to see if we can get in there. And it looks like they may be willing to do something like that. They said one thing that I did learn is they're installing the robots on the production line in the next month or two. So all that equipment's getting put in there. And I think they wanted to make sure that the place looked a little bit more ready to go before they brought media in to check it out. Because I think it's important for people to see that Lucid's factory is they have a factory, they have a production line, they have equipment in there. Because if you notice, we still get a lot of comments that, oh yeah, I'll believe it when I see it, you know, and vaporware, and this isn't going to happen. I think a lot of it's coming from like the hardcore Tesla fans. But, you know, I'm confident at this point that this is happening. Lucid's going to build this car. It's going to be available in Q1 or Q2 of 2021. And they're not going to be one of those companies that, you know, had a lot of promise and then just never built the car.
Right. They're going to at least get the car out there and soon.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So digging into the news, I see we have a few items involving Tesla, but let's start with this first. Kyle, I understand that you've driven the new beta version of the full self-driving suite. And there's lots of videos online as well of other people trying it out. So, but what are your impressions?
Oh, that's a loaded question. Well, I think we should first start explaining what this is, because we haven't talked about it on the podcast yet. And this is everyone knows that any Tesla built after October 2016 has their basically claim that the hardware can be full self-driving. And that's 8 cameras, a radar up front, and 12 ultrasonic sensors. The Model 3 and Y have an interior camera, but it does not seem like that's in use yet for anything practical that would adjust the driving. So 9 cameras in Model 3. And Tesla has been saying for years that they would finally be able to show off full self-driving, and it just never came. And, you know, my car can't even do a quarter of the things that they say it should do. And with that said, this comes with a huge asterisk that I love Autopilot. Absolutely love it. Use it all the time. An amazing system for on-highway assisted driving. But by no means was it ever full self-driving. So they rewrote the whole code. They got things going on the back end. And they said, okay, we need to show the world, I guess, what we're working on. And so they hand selected, you know, the top Tesla fans that would give them the best press. I'm being totally down the middle on this one. They did not select anyone that was ever really that critical of Tesla. It was the president of Tesla owner clubs. It was, you know, the biggest Twitter account fans. It was YouTube content creators and people that in their eyes would probably be a little bit open to the system, failing is the best way to put it. And, I have a friend with this system. He knows that I am very concerned about the safety of these types of things being rolled out to people. Meanwhile, as a user, love it. Amazing. But I said, let's try out this new system. I'm really excited to see, you know, all of this years of promise, how far have we come? I did not watch any videos on the FSD before I drove it because I just wanted to get in and experience it for myself. And it was, first off, an initial impression of, wow, this is one of the coolest things ever, because the vision system can pick up almost everything going on around you. So when you're driving in the car, it accurately recognizes pedestrians. That's the most impressive part. I don't think it missed a human the entire time I was driving, and that's really important. It did a very good job with cyclists. It did a very good job with recognizing parked vehicles and cones. Cones it's been doing for a while. It even recognized the Kia Soul as a trash can, so it was very accurate there. And, you know, it is an interesting vision system. So I think it can see the environment pretty well. Now, what is it doing with that data that it's seeing is where I'm a little bit concerned. You can see all of these little boxes around the car in the screen, if you're watching now, tend to lag behind the actual vehicle a little bit. And that's the reason I went with this four camera setup in my video. And people were very upset about this video, by the way, because I wasn't putting in-car audio in. And while we didn't say anything bad and we were generally very impressed, whether it is my friend who let me drive the car or Tesla, most likely my friend is very conservative about what gets shown to the world with this system. And he doesn't want to lose his early access. And I totally agree with this. I told him, look, I don't want to put you in any position that affects your standing with the early access program with beta testers. I will do as much as you let me do. And he said, okay, you can film. We'll review the footage. If the car touches anything, hits anything, if it does anything that can be construed to harm the company in a massive way, we're not going to post it. So I had to agree to this. It's not what I wanted to do, but I did. And thankfully, we did not cut anything out of the video. The car didn't do anything egregiously bad, but we did keep the in-car audio out because there are certain sound clips where it's like, whoa, we're getting close to the curve. Let me take over. Like, what the hell is it doing now? It's swerving all over the place. You know, these are things that we just thought, or he felt that could be snipped into small bits and used against the company massively. If it were up to me, I would have left them. But the overall driving experience or riding experience was, I would say, poor. Very, very poor, actually. It wasn't even close to being somewhat good in for me. You know, we're driving around Raleigh, North Carolina. This isn't California where the cars seem to be working much better. I believe this is the only car in North Carolina with this system. And it was having a very rough time navigating tight corners. It would get very close to curbs. You can watch this all in the video. Again, I'm not saying anything that's not in the video. And I think I'm being very fair in my assessment. I had to take over many times. Now, in the video, it doesn't look like things are actually that bad. But we're sitting at a stoplight. The wheels are turned this way. There's a curb right there. And it's like, okay. Zeb said, you know, if you listen to the raw audio, which no one has access to, he's like, if you curb a couple wheels, it's fine. So then I let it go and we're driving over curbs. Literally, the car is poof, poof, over them. And I'm like, okay. The left turns, it seems to have the most amount of problems with. Some it executes perfectly. It waits for pedestrians. There's one in particular where we were turning left, a pedestrian crossed, we waited, and then it went. Another pedestrian right after that moment was getting into a parked car. It moved over, let it go by, and we're like, wow, this is pretty good. That was amazing. But then another time, we're making a left turn from the right lane, crossing two lanes of traffic. You know, granted, no one was around, so I let it do it. And then it decides halfway through the maneuver, no, I don't want to go into the far right lane to turn left. We're going into the far left lane, and chirps tires to turn that hard. And it's huge G-forces on the car.
Right.
So it's an early beta. You need to pay attention. And that's fine. That's where the system is today. I don't think anything is wrong with that. Where I think my biggest issue comes is in the two areas. First off, it's driver monitoring system. You can't just use a torque sensor on a wheel to measure the cognitive ability of the human behind the wheel to adjust to driving situations around you. Even eye tracking that Volvo, Ford, GM is using, this is not even perfect. There are new startups, for example, that are working on measuring your cognitive ability through many different sensors to see not only are you looking, but are you processing what's going on? And that's, you need to, because these systems are not hands-off, mind-off. The second area that I think Tesla really needs to do a lot of work on is customer communication and education. There was no extra training. These drivers did not go through a safety training course. It was just loaded onto their cars and good luck. And they had a 10-minute phone interview that says, don't say anything that will harm Tesla. You know, and that makes sense. And they will all agree because they're big Tesla fans, and I get it. That's okay. If they said the same thing for me to play around with it on my car, I would say okay, and I would abide by those rules. Is it would I be considered an accurate journalist in the state? No. And I would say I'm not even able to report on this system accurately because I'm keeping it nice for my friend. I just think it's ludicrous that normal people have access to this type of system without any training. And I really hope Tesla focuses on the safety on this type of system. The functionality, the vision, it's all there. It's going to start to be able to do some really interesting things. You just have to pay attention. That's my take.
I almost feel like, so they've rolled this out to, like you say, some high profile YouTube Tesla influencers for the most part. I've seen a few names that I thought that I wasn't aware of, and I thought I knew everyone in that part of the Tesla community, but I did see a few names of beta users that I didn't recognize. So it's not just the top ones. There's some other people as well. And maybe there's people that we don't know about as well. I don't know. But I did think it was kind of odd. I've been thinking about this for a while now. I thought it was kind of cool that they, you know, that customers have this. But then I watched a bunch of videos and I could see exactly, or I get a better idea of exactly where the system's at. And I'm not exactly sure that it's ready for beta testers. I almost feel like, you know, maybe this should be rolled out to like 100 or so Tesla employees, because it's like they have to train the system. Like you said, the elements seem to be all in place. It's like I watched a video of it doing a number of roundabouts. And, you know, sometimes it did pretty well, and then sometimes not at all. You know, it's like stopping at yield signs, and then maybe it's in the wrong lane, and it's the turn signals or indicators are on the wrong side.
The big thing here is, I think I need to make it clear, the system itself does not inherently make the car unsafe. Because the human driver is meant to be there to take over. It is just like normal autopilot. Nothing is really different in that particular scenario. Where it becomes dangerous is when the driver behind the wheel says, oh, it just did the last four corners great. Let me go pull out my phone or look somewhere else and not pay attention. And that's when accidents occur. It happens on regular autopilot very infrequently, but also on the highway, things aren't really zigging around you. You don't have much cross traffic as much. And so the danger comes from Tesla not explaining how to safely operate the system. They give you a warning that says it might do the wrong thing at the worst time. And that's it. And then, you know, if my mom got this system, right, which someone eventually is going to be able to buy a Tesla off the lot and drive away with this, she would have no idea when to take over. Is the car actually going to complete that maneuver? At what point do I take over? Do I need to pay attention all the time? None of this is explained. It is just expected to be known. And granted, the early testers, I think, are assumed to understand a lot of this technology, and they have a lot of autopilot experience. So I think it's probably fine. I don't think we will see any major accidents, anything major happening with the initial rollout. And then, you know, the other question comes, is this enough to show, you know, to people who have purchased full self-driving, which is now $10,000, feature complete? Is this all they needed to do? And then they'll pull it back and work on it for the next 2 years? We don't know what the future looks like. I hope that's not the case. I hope we see it improve and let people experience it. But I think you need Tesla, not you, but Tesla needs to be very upcoming and forthright and, you know, very transparent about what the limitations are and what is expected and required of the human behind the steering wheel.
It certainly seems like it has a lot more learning to do, and I'm not sure the speed of it. I did see a couple clips where it would make a pass like through a roundabout, and it'd make a mistake, and then they repeat the thing, and it didn't make the mistake the second time. Well, it still wasn't perfect, and it still seems like it needs to be a lot better before it's rolled out to general people, because if people start assuming it's capable of more than it actually is, it could leave the problems. Tom, have you seen watching any of these videos?
Yeah, and you just said it needs a lot of work before it's rolled out to general people. They just rolled it out to general people.
Yeah, exactly.
These influencers and Tesla fans aren't like experienced engineers or Tesla employees. you know, so, you know, I'm kind of with you guys on this. I think it's great. I think, you know, this is an incredibly difficult process and so much engineering has to go into it. But I think it's just nuts that they just gave this to people that don't have any experience and just kind of said, here, you know, don't say anything bad about it, but post all the good stuff on social media. It's just a publicity stunt. You know, it's disappointing, in my opinion, to have Tesla do that. I think they kind of had to eventually, because for the last 3 years, Elon's been saying, by the end of the year, we're going to see feature complete. You know, we're going to drive coast to coast by the end of the year in 2018, by the end of 2019. Now it's the end of 2020. At some point, you had to just say, oh, look, we put it out, and this is how they decided to do it. I think it's disappointing. You'd never see any automaker do anything like this. You know, and Dom, you said earlier that you would have preferred if you know, 100 or so Tesla engineers, you know, we're doing this. I mean, that probably happened already anyway, you know, but maybe instead of that, it should be expanded to 500 Tesla, you know, employees or people that were trained on the system to take these cars all around America, not just in California, drive the hell out of them, put on 10 million miles, you know, before you just give them to some influencers. I think it's nuts, you know, or honestly think it's nuts. And Kyle's probably been, you know, the most, you know, level-headed or straightforward with this. I mean, we've seen the videos. There's a couple of them out there that, you know, they say dude more times than a Keanu Reeves movie, and are just really super excited. And I understand, because it is kind of cool to be in a car where it's making lefts and turns and stopping at traffic lights. And, you know, even if it can do that stuff 75% of the times, that's incredible and really cool. But 75% doesn't cut it. 90%, 99% doesn't cut it. You know, if people are really going to be, you know, as Kyle said, that the problem is, you know, they'll get, you know, complacent and comfortable because it's doing so many things well that they go pick up their cell phone or reach in the back to get something out. And that's when something happens. Listen, I've had it happen to me with basic autopilot on my cars, which I love. It's fantastic. But there's been times where I've momentarily let my guard down and then had to be like, oh crap, you know, there's a concrete divider coming up and I have to take over. And I'm pretty, and I know the limitations, so I'm watching, but the honest thing is, even I get complacent because it's doing so well for so long. You're on a 4-hour drive and it's so easy to just take a minute to do something and not be constantly looking at the road. So that's the danger to this. I mean, it's great that Tesla's pioneering this, and I don't want to be that hard on them, because what they're doing is incredibly difficult, and they're pushing this forward. They're going to get us to autonomous driving perhaps faster than other manufacturers are, but this is a tough way to go about it. I hope nobody gets hurt. And by the way,
your take on this. Go ahead.
By the way, I didn't check the full self-driving package, and I could have, when I ordered mine, I could have gotten it for the 8,000, because I ordered mine before it went up to 10,000, and I'm still not buying it.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
The other take on this that I think might be a good thing, more or less, is if the system was so good and it really manage to get around most of the time in inner city environments, just like it does on the highway currently. But the one time it messes up, you're complacent, not paying attention. I don't think you can even get complacent with this system. You are forced to pay attention. It is so, again, this is based off of my only experience with it in Raleigh, North Carolina, no Tesla with this software had ever driven on those roads before. This isn't California. Our roads are a little weird. They're hard to navigate. It's a tough city to get around, but so is every city. If the system was so good, you might become complacent and actually have an accident. At least it's bad enough where it forces you to pay attention. And then it's kind of fun to just watch the car work, as long as you're one with it. I do want to mention the system will only operate up to 55 miles per hour. Oh. After that, it will then switch to the normal autopilot that everyone has. For example, it does not turn on highways. It's back to normal autopilot for that. And the other limitation was, it's actually not a limitation. The last point was on rural roads where you're under 55, there's not many cars around, you're making lefts and rights out in the country, like where I live in a small city with not much traffic, it's very good. It's just when you get cross traffic, pedestrians, cyclists, other cars, many lanes, some roads are one way, it thinks it's two way, it gets very, it's tough, and that is a tough environment, but it is a definite improvement on some of these higher speed suburban areas that I think I've seen most people testing. Again, I went in the heart of a major city and tested it there because that's what it's branded to do.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good test. Yeah. Hey, Martin, do you have some thoughts about this?
Well, I think this is incredible technology. So this is, can you tell I'm tense already talking about it? I had comments, listeners to my podcast this week say to me, why are you so critical? And, you know, you're a Tesla hater. And that's crazy. I've said so many amazing things about the company. And this is incredible technology. So the point I'd like to make is that there are so many people who haven't done the deep thinking about this in the kind of in the EV world, and they shouldn't have to, but they idolize Elon Musk. And when he says in 2019, there'll be robo-taxis at the end of 2020, they believe him. And the point is that in 2018, somebody lost their life because an autonomous vehicle hit that person. And in the report afterwards, a portion of the blame was put on a distracted driver. And my biggest fear is that the worst happens again. And we just need to make sure that what we talk about here is a two-ton vehicle moving down the highway at quite fast speeds, and to not think this is magical. This is incredible technology, and this is brilliant. But I think people buy in to the wonder of, like, the showman side of Elon, not the genius side or the super brain or the rocket launcher, but the showman side, the P.T. Barnum side of Elon Musk, where, you know, we're going to go to Mars and cars will drive themselves and it's going to be brilliant. And we love him for that. But I think there are so many people out there who think this is ready and don't want to deal with the really boring practical side of it's nowhere near ready and possibly won't ever be. The corner cases for self-driving. Like, just think about it. Like, if you're a driver, you've done this. You've been driving down the road. And maybe you've been getting to a pedestrian crossing or a car, and just something in your head, like just like this weird sixth sense gut reaction, just the body language of the person they're about to walk. And you think to yourself, that person's going to go, aren't they? Like, they're standing still, but there's something that they're going to walk, aren't they? And your foot's already hovering over the brake, and then they go, they step out because they haven't seen you and you're already slowing down. Like that. Like, we've all done that. You've gone, oh, you idiot. Like, whatever. Like, self-driving systems might get to that stage one day. I don't know, when we're all ruled by the robots, but we're so far away from the nuances of driving. And I say all of that with the utmost respect of the incredible work that Tesla's done. So we're in this weird situation where the minute you say anything negative, like, my Twitter just filled up, and like my YouTube comments of people just saying, you hate Tesla, like you hate Elon Musk. It's like, oh my goodness, like, I'm in awe, this admiration of what we are. But what I hate is people say to me, like, oh, robo-taxis are going to be here by the end of the year because Elon said. And you're like, I find it frustrating, and I find it annoying that we don't have that level of that depth of conversation around a machine driving itself. We're just like, hey, it's cool, it's amazing, and our cars fart. And you're like, these are two separate things, right? They're two. So that's my take.
It's kind of like human nature, though, you know, because Elon does do a lot of, you know, interesting and great things, like landing rockets on ships in the middle of the ocean. Like that, like 10 years ago, it was like, no, that's ridiculous. You know, so when people see him do like amazing things, I guess we just assume that sometimes he can do everything he does will be amazing, and every tweet he does is a work of art, but you know, that's not really the case. But yeah. And yeah. So I'm not sure if there's anything else we want to say about FSD beta right now. Anyone?
No, I love my Tesla. I love Tesla. Please don't come after me in the comments. I've already gotten so many. So, you know, it has nothing to do with that. I literally cannot drive anything but a Tesla because it is the only vehicle that works for what I do. I think that's the highest praise. They are killing it right now. But this is dangerous, and I don't know any other way of saying it. You need trained safety drivers. The technology, like Martin said, incredible. It can drive itself, for the most part, around suburban areas. That's cool. You still got to pay attention, though. But it's just not – I think the only reason I'm being so middle of the road, not excited, is because everyone else I've heard said this is the most amazing thing ever. I don't know how you can experience this system and come away with that conclusion.
Yeah. It definitely needs a lot. There's a lot of work that needs to go on, you know, it's like, yeah, all over. And it should be interesting too. And even they still haven't rolled out the teaching software. I mean, they have their own like dojo learning kind of thing where that's machine learning, teaching the how to, you know, do it self-driving better.
Right. Yeah. But we believe, from what I've heard, that the system is adapting to the same scenario in different ways for different attempts, like this roundabout scenario that you talked about earlier. That means one of two things. It's actually getting better, or the system's just seeing different things every time it approaches the same spot.
Right. But okay, so we'll leave it at that for the moment, but we do have some other Tesla things to talk about real quick. We're already chewed up some time. So the California automaker is about to embark on some serious service center expansion. They've added 20 service centers over the past few months or so, and they're going to continue to add them next year at a rate of about one per week. So Tesla vehicle deliveries have grown about 50% over the past year. And I think over the past years, actually, it's been doing like 50%. But so service center growth has been about 12% over the past year, and the mobile service fleet about 8%. I'm not sure if those things need to be like how close they need to be adding up. But Tom, I haven't heard much in the way of negative anecdotes about service centers being backed up and taking long periods of time to fix things like it did a couple of years ago. Have you been to a service center recently? And if so, did they seem like slammed, or are these service centers coming more likely to be in new and expanding markets?
So I haven't personally needed to go to a service center, but I do have a couple of friends, one in particular, that had to have service done, and he was told that he couldn't bring it in for almost 2 weeks. It was like 12 days or something like that, which, you know, isn't unreasonable. I mean, you would think that most most dealerships wouldn't be backed up 2 weeks if you had a car from a traditional OEM. So yeah, you know, the thing is that Tesla sales have exploded so much. They're putting the cars on the streets has far outpaced, I think, their ability to service the cars. And while it hasn't been creating huge problems, it will if they don't continue to scale up. Now, I have my wife's uncle was thinking about buying a Tesla. He lives in upstate New York. And he decided not to because he looked at his options for servicing the vehicle, and it wasn't good. You know, he didn't have anywhere that was within an hour or two of where he lives and works, and or just at that hour and a half drive. And instead, he went out and bought a BMW 530e plug-in hybrid. Mm-hmm. So you know, it is an issue for people, especially new customers. They're going to take a look around where they are. And if they live in some of the more, a little bit slightly more rural areas and say, hey, there's no, I can't get this car serviced without putting it on a flatbed for a couple of hours. You know, it's going to deter them from buying the vehicle. So I think it's a good move. I think they need more service centers. And, you know, I'm glad to see that they're going to step up the, you know, construction of these.
Right on.
I'd like to add to this one quick thing. While we were talking, I went to actually go and schedule service for my car here in local Raleigh-Durham area. And I wanted to see what the next available appointment was. 6 months ago, maybe 8 months ago, it was at least a month or a month and a half out. Long time. They since moved from a little tiny service and sales split center to a massive single building that houses sales and service. And service is huge. This used to be an old gym, like one of those Planet Fitness things, but it's massive. And if you cannot believe this, this blows my mind. We have a ton of Teslas in our area, believe it or not. Like, they're everywhere, on every corner. I can get service tomorrow morning at 8:45 a.m. is next available, which is just amazing to show the progress that they've made. I mean, that is so good. And you know what? They've been really good to me. The service team, when I drop it off, their whole new process is basically remote. I show up, I drop the little key, I push something on an iPad, and then an Uber shows up and takes me away. And it's just total hands off. It's really nice. Really good service experience. I've never actually had a bad service experience from Tesla. I've had things where they forget to fix things on the list, but that's not a Tesla problem. That's the individual person that I was working with that just didn't complete that item. And so there's one outstanding right now. I can't move the passenger seat angle on my car. But that's not Tesla's fault. That is the mobile service. They did offer to come to my house and fix it. We just haven't been here long enough to schedule a day.
Yeah. Well, some of that comes out, comes back to like initial quality or just general quality. You know, if you make good cars out of the factory, you don't need as many service visits, you know?
Yeah. And this problem, by the way, was our fault. We damaged the car. We slammed the door into it. I think Alyssa had a hairbrush down there and it ripped the button off. So it's not a quality issue with the car. This was totally on us.
Right.
Also worth saying, though, that every penny they spend on service comes out of their bottom line. Like the who runs Tesla service is Tesla, like the people that make the cars. Because it's there's no franchise, so it's in their interest to get it right in the long term. There's other things as well. Like, I don't know anyone who's ever bought a Tesla that's gone back to another brand of car. There must be some, obviously, interesting that, you know, that Tom sold his Tesla and bought another Tesla. And I think if you get service wrong enough, you end up getting to that point where somebody will say, well, I got rid of my Model S and I got a Mercedes-Benz. And they never want to get to that point. They're not at that point now, but it's a potential if you mess up service for people who drive more premium cars. They're nowhere near that at the moment, I don't think. And so it's such good news that they're investing in that aftercare, which doesn't necessarily get more cars out of the door, but it does create brand fans who will then become evangelists to all of their friends. So it's a more subtle form of smart investment.
Right. So speaking of investments, in the wake of Tesla's third quarter financial reporting, it's been discovered that they're about to sink a huge amount of money into the machines that build the cars and batteries, namely gigafactories. According to the Tesla's 10Q, which is about to file with the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, Tesla expects its capital expenditures to be at the high end of our range of $2.5 to $3.5 billion in 2020 and increase to $4.5 to $6 billion in each of the next two fiscal years. So that adds up to a total of $15.5 billion, including as much as $12 billion in 2021 and 2022. Now, we know that it's still building parts of its Shanghai factory, and even though it's been producing the Model 3 for months now, and the Berlin and Austin gigafactories are in relatively early stages of construction. And this year, they also put together the 4680 battery pilot production facility. Martin, do you think these projects account for most of this outlay, or is this going to fund some other projects that have yet to be announced, do you think?
I don't think there's anything on the cards that we don't know about. It's just simply the sheer pace that they're doing it and the money that they can throw at it. And I said last week they could spend $5 billion on CapEx, on capital expenditure a year, and it wouldn't touch the sides. They'd still be a profitable company. And then a few days later they came out and said, well, that's you underestimated by $1 billion. And, you know, $6 billion a year is just incredible money to throw at these. It's a huge amount of money to throw at these projects, and that's per year. So when we talk about, I always say, like, you know, Ford are doing an amazing job because they're talking about the electric F-150, the e-Transit, and blah 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 blah, and they know Ford's $11.5 billion investment in electrification, and then I sometimes forget to remember over what time period is that. So when you look at the compressed nature of how quickly they're going to spend this money, It's impressive, but equally impressive is what it will unlock, which is 500,000 cars this year, 1 million cars potentially next year, and then 2 million cars a year by the end of that period. It's just insane.
It's a lot of cars. It's a lot of money.
Man. Every year. And again, the next year. And they're growing.
Right. So that investment gets the Cybertruck up and going, the Model Y and the new Model Y, I guess, because that's being re-engineered and redesigned from the pavement up, I guess, we'll see that in Berlin. And also battery production in, I guess, Berlin's getting the first 4680 battery production, if I understand correctly. Anyone?
Yep, that's true. So the 4680 is coming off the pilot line in California. Right. They are, when the yield is good enough, they will be using those cells for, you know, semi-truck development in California, but also they'll be stockpiling them and then shipping them to Berlin, where they will become part of the structural battery pack in the new Model Ys.
I understood that Berlin actually is going to be making the 4680 there as well, right?
Eventually, yeah. So those I think it's the South Korean robots and production lines that Tesla bought will be heading to Berlin. So Berlin will be the first place in the world with a fully operational cell production line at scale, but even then, the pilot, what they call the pilot production line, is still one of the top 10 in the world. So so they will be made in Berlin, and the Berlin Model Ys will be the first cars available to the public with this technology in.
That's going to be actually really great, because those Model Ys also have this dog. that's blue, right? Where are you going, blue? okay, sorry, getting sidetracked. Those Model Ys will have the one piece extruded front part and the one piece extruded back part mated to the middle, the new battery design and everything. Okay, so that's pretty cool. But let's get on to some more things because we're running out of time. So Tesla has made some changes to their cars. So regenerative braking in an electric vehicle is typically what happens when you're driving and you lift your foot off the throttle. Basically, the car's motor has its polarity switch and it acts as a brake while producing energy and sending it back to the battery. Now, if you're a fan of weak regen or the ability to select the level of this braking force, you may be saddened by this news. Apparently, Tesla has removed the ability to change regen from standard, which is rather strong, to low, or some people, new drivers and people looking for ultimate efficiency for highway driving, they kind of prefer that low setting. So, Tom, is this crimping your driving style?
So this one kind of baffles me. It's been reported. Actually, the website Electric, I got to give them credit, is the one that broke this news a few days ago and said that some of the newer Teslas being delivered now don't have the ability to toggle between standard regeneration, which is the stronger regen, and low, which reduces the amount of regenerative braking force. It still has liftoff regeneration, so it's not like total free will ghosting, but it's less. So the odd thing about it is, you see up here, we have on the screen here, Tesla actually recommends in the Model 3's like owner's manual to put the car in low when you're on icy and snow-covered roads, because it will help prevent wheel slip. Because when you lift off and have very strong regen, you know, there's the possibility that it, you know, because it's kind of like tapping your foot on the brakes, that the traction control has to work to make sure you don't have slippage. So many electric vehicle owners will do this, not just Teslas. If their car can change the regen settings in the winter, they put it on the less aggressive regen setting, and it lessens the chance of the car losing grip. But that's not the only reason why you might want to put it on a low setting. As you mentioned earlier, Dom, some people prefer to put it on a low setting when they first get their electric car because they're not used to such aggressive regen. But those people, on many occasions, end up changing it over to the strong regen not too long after they own the car. So that in itself isn't a reason to have adjustable regenerative braking. But there's another reason where a few other reasons. When you're driving on long distance highway rides, it is most efficient to coast. Unless you have to slow down, that's when you want to have stronger regen. So many people, when they're like hypermiling and driving long distances, they'll flip the car onto low regen. I do it sometimes when I'm driving up to Vermont, although I drive in standard mode most of the time. Then there's another reason even where some people get motion sickness very easily while they're driving in a car. And with regen on very strong, if the driver isn't careful, it's very easy to have this kind of forward and backward motion as you regen and accelerate. Now, the driver typically doesn't get motion sickness because their brain knows it's coming. As you lift off, as you press, your brain is processing, okay, I'm going to go this way. But the passengers don't have that, and they get the effect a lot more. I have a good friend of mine who actually, when the first time I drove in the car with him, was like, I'm getting motion sickness. I don't know if I like these electric cars. And I'm like, okay, let me do this. And I clicked it off. Then I was also cognizant of how I drove. And he goes, oh, that's much better after like 10 minutes. So there are reasons why people might want to toggle between a strong regen and a weaker regen. This isn't just, you know, oh, strong regen's better, which we're getting a lot of the comments on. I posted this in my Model 3 Facebook group. And so many people are like, get rid of it. We don't need it. You know, I've never changed it. Okay, great. You've never changed it. There are reasons why other people might want to change it. So it's kind of strange that Tesla has removed it. Now, we should note, it doesn't seem to be being removed even when people have software updates on existing cars, which is strange. You know, I had a recent software update and it wasn't taken off. So nobody that has it on an existing car has seen it removed. So it's kind of weird that Tesla would have two different, you know, a Model 3 that was bought, you know, 4 months ago has the option. A Model 3 that's delivered now doesn't. And then they all get a software update in a month or so, and the one still has it and the other one doesn't. You know, so yeah. I don't know if it's going to go away. I don't know why Tesla did this. Nobody knows. We can't get, yeah, obviously it's pointless to try to reach out to Tesla. The best thing you could do is tweet Elon and say, hey, why the hell did you do this? Which people are doing. I'd love to be able to get an answer. But you know, that's Tesla. Take the good with the bad.
Is there any way that this could be a regulatory thing? Does that make sense? Like, you know, the whole WLTP, EPA official mileage of an EV is a minefield anyway, because it depends on how you drive a car. Same applies to gas cars, doesn't it? But if you are doing official testing in a car, you know, what are the rules? Do you have air conditioning on? Do you have low mode or standard mode? And could this be something to do with the new model years of the new cars being produced, where in order to get those figures, the only way to do it is to have stronger regen?
That is a possibility. But one of the questions I have with that is I remember a few years ago talking to BMW representatives about the i3 and about different modes. And I, at the time, at least, I believed the way the EPA range rating at least was that it was with the car was tested in how it defaulted. When you got in the car, if it defaulted to a certain driving mode, then that's the mode that it was tested in. So they couldn't put it in Eco Pro mode or Eco Plus mode and get better miles, but then people drive it in standard mode and they're disappointed. So the reason why so many people are saying, oh, that's because of the new EPA, their range rating, and they want to, I don't think that floats, because the car does default to standard mode unless you change it, you know, so I believe that it wouldn't affect the EPA range rating. I could be wrong. Rules could have changed. They change all the time, but it makes sense that the EPA range rating is done on how the car defaults to. Because unless you have to go in and change something and say, okay, no, I want low, it shouldn't be tested in that. But who knows? They change these regs all the time. It just seems weird to me that Tesla just took this out. And for crying out loud, if that is the reason, come out and say it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, maybe we can send some spies, Martin. Maybe you can get in touch with somebody there. Let us know if perhaps they're going to bring it back. Maybe there's some like new hardware, breaking hardware that, you know, they're still working with that they have to
maybe,
you know, smooth out some problems. I don't know.
Very strange.
Yeah. But we should move along a little bit. So moving away from Tesla, Mini, which is part of BMW Group, has some new all-electric vehicles coming. The company issued a press release Tuesday, which said it would continue to offer a three-door electric Mini Cooper and would add a new crossover model in the small car segment and a compact crossover. So while it sounds like these two new vehicles will also be made with internal combustion engine options, the company also announced it would build a vehicle in China based on a new vehicle architecture developed from the ground up for pure e-mobility. Interestingly, that will be done in partnership with the Great Wall Motor Company. So far, Tesla is the only foreign automaker in China that has been allowed to build its own factory without a Chinese company partner. That's continuing, apparently. Mm. So, Martin, this car is from your neck of the woods. Do you have any more insight you can share with us of these models? Like, for one, real quick, for instance, like, so the two new ones will be both crossovers, but one's in the small car segment and one's a compact. I don't really get it.
No, but I mean, either way, Mini doesn't mean Mini anymore if you look right at where the brand started. So this is interesting because the previous management, who are no longer on the board of management, were talking about Mini being an all-electric brand. And then the new guard are talking about, or at least the new guy in charge, is talking about Mini being an all-electric brand. Very interesting, talking about combustion engines not being part of the mix from the end of the decade, from 2030 onwards, for new cars coming out which are electric only. And that's really interesting because, of course, parent company BMW have their power of choice philosophy, where they say to their way of doing it to customers is, if you want an i3, we'll make you one, an X3, however you want it. So if you want it with a petrol, diesel, hybrid, plug-in, the power of choice, like one factory, one line, putting in the powertrain that they want, which is fine. Their money, they do how they need to transition over to electric, whereas the subsidiary company or their, you know, the brand they own in Mini saying, we're going to make pure electric cars and we're not going to do that power of choice thing. So actually, if you want petrol engines in that car that you like, tough, because it's going to be EV only. So that's great. And it's great. Another brand talking openly about the end of burning things.
Right. Yeah. So actually we're at the hour already. So we need to speed through a few things real quick. And these new cars, I believe, are only coming out in 2024, possibly. Well, because so there's another little bit of Mini news. So sticking with them, it seems like they're going to make take their performance trim level, John Cooper Works, and make it an electrified performance sub-brand starting in 2024 with re-engineered versions of the three core models, which what I would imagine are the three we were just talking about in this previous story, the three-door hatch and the two crossovers. It would have its own standalone model eventually, but not at this stage. And yeah, so we'll leave that. And next, really quick, Ford has also announced that something. It's electrifying its Transit. That's its full-size van, not the old Econoline of old, but it's the newer, more aerodynamic, streamlined, full-size van. And that's going to be unveiled on November 12th. And it's probably going to look pretty much like the combustion engine version with perhaps a different grille that blocks more air from entering under the hood area. Many of you might not know this, but Ford already made an electric Transit van of sorts. In Cologne, Germany, the company produced an electric box truck that's based on the Transit chassis for a street scooter, a German company. And those are sold to, like, the Postal Service there and some other delivery type companies. And that's not to be confused either with the Transit Connect Electric that Ford made from 2010 to 2012 with Azure Dynamics, were kind of a nifty vehicle. No, this is a full-size van. Ford has an agreement to produce an electric version of the Transit. Oh, this is the full-size one that they were making before. They had an agreement to produce this electric version of the Transit for street scooter starting in October 2018. It put out about 20 kilowatts of power, 121 horsepower, had a 76 kilowatt hour battery. So, and it had a range of about 124 miles, but street scooter ended up losing a lot of money. And now they're going to buy from other suppliers. So that's not an ongoing thing. So it should be interesting to see if they're actually going to use the same component configuration. You know, when this comes out, we'll see what size batteries they have, what kind of ranges they're looking at. So, Kyle, do you think what are the chances are? Do you think that's going to happen?
That's going to happen.
Look, I'm not really sure, but what all I really want to see here is a lifted version of this. Big knobby tires, bed in the back, right? Little stove, an adventure overlanding camping version of this Transit.
That's true. That's going to be really cool. Maybe we can get somebody to work up a visual representation of that, because that'd be great. Actually,
yeah, there's a plug-in version of the Transit already that I don't know if you get, but we certainly get. Does 35 miles of range. It's got some kind of geofencey stuff where it knows it's going into zero emission cities, and it'll turn on the battery or turn off the motor. Rather, that's on sale now. So, but it's a bit of a compromise too far. I don't think too many companies, because it's expensive as well, have gone for the plug-in hybrid Transit, but an all electric version would be so good for those deliveries that we're all getting more of these days.
Right. It could be interesting too, see if they actually take components from the Mustang Mach-E and put it into this. Kind of curious how they're, Ford's approach to electrification has been a little ad hoc. They've got like an MEB vehicle from Volkswagen. They've got a Rivian SUV. They've got their Mustang Mach-E, and they've got this. I mean, it's kind of like all over the place, you know, where a lot of other places are like GM and Volkswagen, you know, are developing their platform and then building a series of vehicles on that platform. But anyway, so moving along, speaking of new vehicles coming from companies, FCA, that's what is Fiat? I can't remember that right now. Okay, but FCA, Dodge, Chrysler, right. Their CEO, Mike Manley, recently said that Ram, that's their truck division, would have an electrified pickup truck. Now, many outlets, including the Detroit Free Press, have said it will be an electric pickup truck. But here is the exact quote from Manley. I do see that there will be an electrified Ram pickup in the marketplace, and I would ask that you just stay tuned for a little while, and we'll tell you exactly when that will be. So it's, you know, an upcoming thing. But Tom, when you hear electrified, do you think all electric, or do you think something else?
Well, it certainly sounds like electrified is usually when a manufacturer wants to promote that they're going electric, but they're really not ready to go electric. So that's, we'll electrify this and we'll electrify that. Then you find out it's got 15 miles of range and it's a plug-in hybrid. That said, you know, I can't get too excited about FCA until they show us more about their electrification plans. They've been, you know, kind of lagging behind the industry, and I don't see that changing. You know, put up or shut up, Dodge, Ford's coming out with their electric F-150. GM's going to have the electric Silverado. You know, if Dodge wants to drag their feet on this, that's fine. They've finally built up. Now, I won't say finally. They've been building up momentum with the Ram pickup here in the U.S. The sales have been really, really good. They've really eaten into Ford and GM's market, which used to dominate that market. You know, Dodge was a distant third. But the new Rams are very competitive vehicles. They can lose the ground that they've gained if they take too long to come up and electrify these vehicles. Once Ford and Chevy have their fully electric pickups out, Dodge is going to look like a dinosaur.
Yeah. So, okay. We're really short on time. So let's finish off with this Polestar bit. So meanwhile, back at the Polestar Ranch, the Polestar 2, which just began deliveries not so long ago, is being recalled again. Apparently, 4,586 cars suffer from one of two issues, or both. Vehicles could have defective inverters, or there could be an issue with high voltage coolant heaters. Which, yeah. So Polestar will be getting in touch with owners to schedule parts replacements. So this, as we said, this is already the second Polestar 2 recall. 2,200 of them, basically every car that had been delivered about a month ago, were recalled. So it's kind of interesting to note, judging by these recall numbers, that Polestar have delivered a couple thousand vehicles this month. So, Kyle, are these recalls enough to dampen your Polestar enthusiasm?
Look, they certainly don't help. I think, you know, we really would have hoped that this wouldn't have happened. But this is their first electrified platform for Volvo Polestar. Of course, Geely's been building other EVs, especially in China, for a while. But this is their first full battery electric. It's not off to a good start, gotta say. We have, you know, recalls going. But what is really good is the car when it's working. So what I'm hoping is this is it. It's a speed bump and it goes. I hope it's not a sign of future times. You know, there's no denying, you know, I've spent a lot of time with Polestar 1 and 2. They're fantastic. The Volvo XC40 Recharge is still way at the top of the list to enter our garage. And we're going to be keeping a close eye on these. None of these problems seem massive, except for those that the car just shuts off in the middle of the road, right? Right. That's where, you know, you can still steer, you can still brake, but you lose propulsion and it happens immediately. Hopefully this will solve some of that. The software gets a little bit less glitchy and we're good to go. We're just watching, you know, these small-ish companies work out their new platforms. It's kind of interesting. Other companies such as Tesla have been doing this for years. So, not that that gives them a pass, but it's just something to consider.
Yeah, it's like a small car beta rollout, you know, but I personally, I don't know why, but I just have, you know, I have a lot of confidence that because they're backed by, you know, a huge company, they have lots of ability and lots of access to engineers. I'm pretty sure this will, you know, be all smooth out and it'll be fine because it's a great car. It's a great looking car. But hey, rollers, on the subject of Polestar real quick, its parent company, Geely, is apparently building a new factory in Chongqing, China, which is not so far from where they already build, I believe, the Polestar 1. They build one on the coast and then they build another one about 1,000 or so miles inland. And this is going to be Chongqing will be close to that as well. And that's going to be, that'll have a manufacturing capacity of about 30,000 units. And we're speculating that it could be for the new Precept sports sedan, which is really sweet. And I can't wait to see more about that because, you know, it's a beautiful car. We have a bunch of stories that we're not going to be able to get to today, but that's the way it goes sometimes. So this brings us to the end of our show. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. If you have any comments about any of the topics on today's show, you can comment on the Inside EVs podcast post, the YouTube comment section below, or on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists here on Twitter. Tom is at Tomalog. Martin is at EV News Daily. Kyle is at Out of Spec. And I'm at Dominic_Y. There you go. You can see it on your screen there. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all next week. Ciao.